Welcome to the Borderless Podcast, your guide to traveling, investing, and living beyond borders, where we talk about living the life that you want to live, where you want to live it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another Borderless Podcast. Today I have on Rich Hallman from FAR International. I had a lot of people when I was coming down here to Medellin that said, hey, you should reach out to FAR International. There was a number of people that knew who Rich was, and so I thought I'd definitely have him on. And it just so happened that that company was also the company that runs the co-working space that I've been working out of. So I was able to go and visit him in his office. It's an interesting case because he moved down here after he was 60 years old without knowing a lot of Spanish. And 10 years later, he has a company, over 100 employees, four offices throughout the country, and he's done very well. Real estate, coffee investments, and other types of things that he does. I think we had a good discussion about how he was able to do that. And unfortunately, like half of the interview is cut off because there was a problem with my computer when I was recording. So it was actually a much longer interview, but I did get about half an hour of it. So I think we went over some good stuff. We talked a lot about Medellin, and we were just moving into Puerto Rico. A lot of the stuff after it cut off, we talked about Puerto Rico. They have a lot of big things going on in Puerto Rico, but you can definitely go to the website for FAR International and find out about Puerto Rico and what they're doing there. So I hope that you enjoy it. And again, if this is, you know, like I always say, if this is your first time listening, please go over to the website, borderlessblog.com. First of all, you know, check out all the information, tons of free information on the website, and sign up for the mailing list, please. You know, get on there and you'll get updates and what's going on and all the videos and podcasts that I put out. So lots of free information I'll send right to your email inbox. So thanks a lot for listening, and I hope you enjoy the interview. Borderless. All right, everybody. Welcome to another Borderless Podcast. This is your host, James Guzman. And today, it's great to be talking to Rich Hallman. He is the founder and president of FAR International. And with offices all over Colombia, they're expanding, and over 100 employees here in Colombia. So very interesting kind of expat story. So thanks for inviting me to your office here. Talk to you.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people that are aware of your of what you're doing here, and have asked, you know, oh, you should stop by FAR and things like that when we've talked about real estate, because I do talk about real estate on the podcast. Maybe we could start just with, you know, in the beginning, why you chose Medellin. You came down here basically just kind of, you know, blazing the path, right, and learning about it and setting up the company. That's really great how you're able to do that in a market where there was no English-speaking market pretty much. So how was that experience when you first came down?
Well, actually, I first came down on vacation in August 2006. I had some friends in Florida who kept saying, you got to go to Medellin. And these two guys both had Colombian girlfriends. They said, you're going to love Medellin. I was single. I said, well, it sounded like fun, but for a couple of years, I said no, because I had this perception Medellin was dangerous, like a lot of people. And finally, came August 2006, and within about an hour of being here, I had this sensation like, wow. I mean, so much beyond my expectations, and it hit me immediately. World's best kept secret. It just was in my mind. I just couldn't believe the difference in the perception and the reality.
Right.
So, I stayed here, just partied for 10 days, and had fun, and
you know, can do that.
Well, yeah, and it was every day was springtime, and people were nice, and it's just a great energy.
Right.
So I came back in October 2006, and about the third day in October, I think I'd sobered up one morning. I'm by the pool, and I said, I better buy something before the world gets here. I mean, they're going to get here, the price is going to go up. So I Googled Medellin real estate in English so I could find an agent or a broker, and there wasn't one word in English,
right.
Not a word. I said, "Dang, who's going to take care of all the foreigners?"
Right,
because they're going to come when they see what I saw, they're going to come.
Yeah.
So at age 63, not speaking Spanish, not being in real estate, I started the plans for the company.
Wow. Oh, you weren't in real estate before?
No, I did a bunch of other stuff, but I knew it was going to happen here. So, you know, if you know the future, you can plan for it. So I started out with one part-time employee end of 06, and now we've got 110 employees and four offices, and it's really taken off. And
great.
The business model's worked here, and we're now in Puerto Rico, open up in Panama City, and we're looking seriously at Peru.
Oh, Peru as well, okay.
Yep.
Oh, well, congratulations. I mean, usually with the podcast, what I talk about is people making dollars in their home country, getting something secure, and then kind of venturing out. But, you know, that's also an option, and you've done well here with, you know, starting your own company. And I thought that was a really interesting part of it. Did you find the, like, hiring and bureaucracy and stuff? How were you able to get through that down here? Yeah, that's...
Well, start with hiring. I mean, anywhere in the world, anywhere, the key is the people. I mean, you can't build a great company without great people. I had one company in the States, about 45, 50 people. When we finally shut her down, I was looking at it. I said, there's about 40 of these people I never should have hired. I was like, but they had good resumes. They looked good. They interviewed well. And I've learned a lot from that experience, and now we have different ways of hiring. We're very proactive-oriented in the hiring process. And we got a great team here. I mean, we just have some phenomenal people. But, you know, about 5% people get in.
Yeah.
The rest, we screen them out for different reasons. So that's critical. The other, of course, the bureaucracy, dealing in a foreign country, the rules, regulations, laws, it's a pain in the rear. There's a learning curve there. But part of what we do to help foreigners, visitors, investors, renters, buyers, whatever, is we made all those mistakes. You know, we vetted out all of our services and our contacts, but it's a process. It's not easy.
Right.
And from 2007, when I moved here, to 2012, I was averaging about 80 hours a week. I didn't take any Clement holidays off or U.S.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but you can make it happen.
Right. Yeah, I think that's one thing people need to definitely wrap their head around, just in business in general, like the idea that, oh, you know, I got the next gimmicky thing that's going to get me easy money. But when you're building a serious company, everybody that I talk to that I know of that have built a serious, like an actual company,
sure.
I mean, you're busting your ass for the first many years, you know, to get it going.
I'm down about 50, 60 hours a week now, so
yeah.
I feel like I'm on vacation. So
right. But, I mean, I've been working here, by the way, at Global Express, which you guys also run here. And it's a great co-working space right here in the center of Poblado. If you ever come down, you know, it's a good place to consider, have an office. And you got some, you know, energetic employees here. It's in a great part of town, so, I mean... You're having fun, and it's not like grueling work here.
Well, no. I mean, look, I was in Naples, Florida, 14 years before I moved here. Naples is nice. You ever been to Naples?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, nice. One of the nicest towns in the country, great place, good lifestyle. But my favorite saying is my best day in Naples, Florida, in 14 years was not as good as my worst day in Medellin 11 years.
Wow.
I mean, it's just so much better being here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an amazing place. And every day you get up and it's springtime.
Yeah.
Your only dress decision is long sleeve shirt or short sleeve. That's
right.
It.
Yeah.
I never worn a jacket here. Never worn a coat.
Yeah.
I don't have a heater. Don't have an air conditioner. Don't have a fan. There's no bugs. No screen porches. Clean water. Nice people. Great infrastructure.
Yeah. Let's talk a little more about Medellin. So what do you think? For people, because I have a lot of people that are interested in Medellin. You know, some people have been here, others haven't. They hear a lot. So, yeah, we've talked about the weather. Obviously, there's, like, cost of living. What are other things that you think that, you know, people considering to come down here, what are, like, the real pulls for you that brought you down here?
Well, I mean, when I got down here, it's just such an amazing place. It's a very cosmopolitan city.
Right.
And it's got this really nice energy to it. It's a clean city. It's a culture of cleanliness.
That's true.
Great transportation. I mean, you can live here about one-third to one-fourth the cost of living in the United States.
Yeah.
And for single people, I mean, just there's a lot of beautiful people there.
Yes.
I mean, it's sort of unbelievable. it's hard to describe, but in terms of real estate, though, I mean, Medellin is still one of the best bargains in the world, because if you look at the cosmopolitan cities of the world, on a cost per square meter basis, Medellin is the least expensive. Now, it used to be Quito, but since Ecuador's dollar-based and the dollar is strong, Quito's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the irony is, why would probably the best city in the world be the least expensive? And it's because of one word, only one word, You know what that is?
No.
Pablo.
I was going to say
Pablo. Yeah, it's Pablo. I mean, you know, people in the States and Europe, they look at Netflix and look at all these movies. And
they keep coming out. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like... Some people say, like, Pablo's dead.
That was a long time ago.
He's gone.
Yeah. You know?
And I feel much safer here. I was just looking at a news report today. Chicago had 8 murders and 27 shootings over the Memorial Day weekend. I mean, if they had that in Medellin, it'd be all over the international news.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel much safer here than the States.
Mm. Yeah, well, you know, for people that don't, you know, understand the history of this, I mean, obviously there is, you know, different types of illegal activity and organized crime or whatever, but the majority of all that cartel activity went to Mexico. I mean, that's what's going on in Mexico right now. They basically, like, hijacked from the Cali cartel and all that. So it's like all that's going on right now with the cartels, and it's, you know, that's playing out right now. But that has been, you know, that was a long time ago that, you know, Pablo died and all that. I mean, it's the latest you could say, like, early 90s, that there was any of that going on, would you say, or...
I'd say early, mid, even the 90s had some problems here. That all changed in 2002 when former President Rubio came in and fixed the security situation.
Yes.
And it just changed overnight.
Yes, yes, so, yes.
And sometimes we've got to remind people that drug problems are not in Colombia. They're in the United States. The United States and Europe have an insatiable drug appetite. Mm. The United States has the highest incarcerated number of people incarcerated in the whole world.
Yeah.
And half of those are drug-related offenses. And you know, let's get, why is the drug usage so great in the States? And people, a lot of people just are not happy. They're sort of miserable. They're looking for an escape.
Right.
And it's sad.
Yeah.
But the problems are there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the violence is. And that's where the people are going to jail. It's not here. I mean, these people are too smart. They don't need the cocaine to get by in life.
Yeah. Well, you know, another thing that surprised me about Medellin specifically was the fitness aspect of it. People are really into fitness. You know, they shut down the road and I'm just... on every Sunday, and everybody goes running and biking and walking their dogs and stuff, and that's great. A lot of hiking and things. I've really enjoyed that.
No, very environmentally friendly here. Very dog friendly.
Yes.
I mean, it's they even clean up. You don't see any dog poop on the street.
No,
people clean amazing. Everything up here.
The dogs look nice too.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, cause especially, you know, in Mexico, it's not like that.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I've been for, well, in Mexico, and they do not take care of dogs very well. Like, it's over there, but anyways, so that's great. And so you have you're selling real estate, you're managing real estate, you have co-working office. What are some other types of things?
Well, we started out in 2007 as selling real estate, and about half our people buying properties from us, the foreign, because 95% of our buyers, investors, renters, are foreigners.
Mm.
So they wanted us to manage the property, so we sort of segued into property management. And so that went along for a while. And then about 2010, I brought in a commercial partner because we felt there'd be more investment opportunities in the commercial space than even residential.
Mm.
So we started doing commercial projects. And we brought in one of our employees who was an architect from Colorado. And we developed a remodeling, construction, design, build service group. So we actually have 4 separate divisions. Okay. That are all profitable. And then this Global Express concept came up afterwards. So that's sort of a fifth area. And now we're moving into agriculture. We just completed a $5.7 million coffee project.
Oh, well.
We're doing coffee consolidation of some smaller farms, and it's pretty phenomenal situation. Mm. So we're going to, actually went over so well, we're going to do a secondary offering.
Great. Yeah, that's interesting.
But it's there's just so many opportunities in Colombia because of the fact this country is just overlooked by the world.
Hmm.
And yet it's a very vibrant economy. The economy is doing better here than the States. It's the third largest GDP in Latin America, the oldest democracy in Latin America, the number one ally of the United States in Latin America. And this country is very entrepreneurial.
Right.
And we're riding the wave now. It's all starting to happen.
Yeah, and I've noticed that there's a difference with a lot of Latin American countries or countries, you know, throughout the world, whether they like... you know, foreigners coming in and doing business.
Yep.
And it seems to me that here they like it. A lot of times they maybe don't know, you know, like, you know, you have to, you know, we want to do this and that, and you have to kind of show them how you want to do it, and maybe they can, but they want to work with you. at least. You know, like we were talking about with some of the bureaucracy or things like that, like saying, look, I'm trying to do this, maybe it would be easier, but they're willing to work with you. It's not like they want to block you out or something like that, I've noticed.
Well, there's two things. One is bureaucracy, which exists everywhere in the world, so that's a separate issue. But, but one of the nicest surprises for me, and I was concerned about it before I started the company, was the U.S., North America, Europe, we've been bad-mouthed in Colombia for 50 years, you know, all the drug stuff and the violence and the FARC and this and that. So all this negative press, it was going on until 2004 or 5, and it started turning, getting better press. But I was thinking, how are these people going to accept foreigners or people in the States when we've been so down on their country and their city? And the amazing thing is that they love us. I mean, they're just so friendly. There's not, I've never had anything negative because I'm from the United States here. They like Western things. They accept us. They of course, some of the people from Colombia, you know, went to Miami when the violence was bad. So, but so we're in great shape. And the other concern as a single guy is like, well, what if you go out with a Colombian girl? Are the guys going to resent it here? Well, these guys here all have three or four girlfriends. They're like, there's plenty. You help us out. We, you know, I mean, it's, it's crazy. So it's just, it's an idyllic place. I can't think anywhere in the world has a better set of circumstances as Medellin.
Okay. And when you, did you speak Spanish when you first came back?
On a 1 to 10, I was about a 2. I'm right now about a 5.
Okay. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's interesting. You know, a lot of people, the thing that holds them back, right, is that they think, well, I don't know the language. How am I going to do all this? And but I mean, you came down without such a...
Well, you can learn the language quickly. My problem was because of the work schedule. I was actually taking Spanish lessons in early 07, and then when I started the company, it just, that was it. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I've gone back, tried to, in fact, I'm trying again right now. I'm getting a little more time. But they've got great schools here, and you can pick up the language very quick if you just apply yourself.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to work and learn a language, so it's a little tougher.
So you'd recommend, like, somebody just, you know, if they come down, they need to sign up for, like, a class. And, you know,
we
just
have a school a block away called Toucan.
Toucan, right.
Yeah, they get private lessons. They get group lessons. It works out great.
So. Another, I think he's from the States as well, too, right? The owner of that?
Rob Danks. Well, he has a Colombian partner, but Rob is from the States.
Yeah, so another successful and a foreigner
over here. Yeah, they've done well.
Okay. And I think that some people that are here might get the impression, especially if they're hanging out in Poblado all the time, that maybe real estate is kind of expensive here and there's not great, you know, deals and all that type of stuff. What do you think about that? And maybe how do you look at deals differently than somebody from the United States or something like that? How is the real estate market here?
Well, I mean, El Poblado is the Beverly Hills of Medellin. It's the nicest area. So we're in the most expensive area in Medellin.
Right.
And there's millionaires that live here. There's billionaires. It's a nice area. But for $150,000, you can get a really nice place here. So that's our average ticket is $150,000 to $200,000. I mean, really nice.
Yeah.
Just great views and good size and all the amenities and I mean it's a paradise. So, and we're very inexpensive to most major cities and any cosmopolitan city in the world.
Right.
So it's still a bargain. And the reason we're still a bargain, and this is one of the ironies, we're in our nice neighborhood of Medellin compared to say Cartagena or Bogota, we're 30 to 40% less expensive. And yet we're a much better place to live than those two cities. And again, that's the stigma of Pablo Escobar and Medellin.
Yeah.
That's where the value is.
Right.
Is this misperception.
So when you have four offices, right, with the real estate
here. Cartagena, Cali, Bogota, Medellin.
So with those differences, I've only been to Medellin here. What would you say the differences are? I have people that, like I have one person now who's saying that they want to buy something here. They're thinking about Cali. They're not sure, you know, what they would like better and all that. What would you say would be, like, the differences between the cities if somebody's trying to figure out which one they should think about?
That's a great question. All four cities work, for investment-wise, for different reasons. I mean, Medellin, because it's the best city in the world, the best deal in the world, so, and we have the best climate. And it's just great. I mean, in terms of living, you're not going to find a better place. So Medellin works. And it's a value because of Pablo Escobar and the misperception. So Medellin works for those reasons. Bogota works because 50% of all the visitors that come to Colombia come through Bogota. Bogota is a seat of government, the seat of business, and a seat of culture. We've got about 9 million people. It's sort of our New York City of Colombia.
Right.
And so there's money being made in Bogota, and we're making money there. It's not where I want to live, but it has a lot of positives and a great nightlife options, a great dining option. So Bogota works. Cartagena is different. Cartagena is really a tourist city. It's a big vacation destination, big cruise ship destination. It's got a really scenic old city of Cartagena. It's a unique UNESCO World Heritage Site, very different. They have a nice little beach area, Boca Grande area. So Cartagena works because you're getting those strong vacation rentals. Investments work well there. Not anywhere I really want to live. 6 months of the year, it gets hot there.
Mm-hmm. It's a little more expensive there too, right, to live?
Well, the nice areas, sure. Mm-hmm. It's a little more expensive than here. But
right.
But comparison to other parts of the world, no. But I mean, Cartagena works, and again, it's a vacation-driven tourist market. Cali is a sort of the hidden gem. There's a part of northwest part of Cali that reminds me a lot of parts of Poblado in Provenza. And it's about 20-30% less expensive than Medellin. Really up and coming. Some great bars, nightlife, restaurants. A little bit warmer, but in the northwest part, there's a river that runs through it and a nice breeze in the afternoons. And we've got 3 projects we've completed there in Cali. We have an office there. It's doing very well. So it's a bargain. It's a sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some people that actually really like it there. So it's really, the word is getting out about
right.
Cali.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's some great options down here. It's, what is it, like a 3.5 hour flight to Miami?
About 3 hours and 15 minutes, yeah.
So, I've enjoyed it down here. So what, like some other areas of, is it only Colombia? You said Peru or something like that. Well, I mean, obviously you guys are expanding in a big way to Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
I call it Medellin with a beach.
Right.
No, really, I call it the world's second best kept secret.
Mm.
We got into Puerto Rico a couple years ago. I was at a conference in South Beach, Urban Land Institute, and a guy got up and spoke about Puerto Rico, and I said, whoa. I started having deja vu all over again, just like Medellin. Back 10 years, 15 years ago, all the news was bad about Puerto Rico. Low prices, fake news, real news. Oh, it's like Puerto Rico's going to fall off the map, never recover from the hurricane, yada, yada. And I'm saying, I've heard this before, so...
Right.
About a year ago, one of my partners and I went and spent 10 days there on the ground, got a good lay of the land, and said, this is going to be perfect for us. Low cost per square meter, a higher rental market than here, incredible tax incentives, and for U.S. citizens, you don't need a passport or visa. I mean, you can come on in. It's like traveling the States. But they have phenomenal tax incentives to help the island's recovery.
Right.
The best in the world for U.S. citizens. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfect fit for us. And
right.
We're in there now. We just held a major conference there, opened an office there, and we're getting ready to start offering projects and investments
right.
there.
No, but I've heard that it's in the areas that most people live that it's kind of expensive real estate there. I mean, have you been able to find deals?
Is that one?
No, like Dorado and places like this.
Oh, we're not doing Dorado. That's for only. No, we're talking about San Juan.
San Juan, is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, San Juan is... Here's what you can get: a place on the beach in San Juan, compared to say Miami, at about 1/3 the price with a better beach. So I mean, it's that simple,
right?
And if you're a foreign, if you're a foreign investor, you still get the EB-5 visa. It makes like, why not 1/3 the price with a better beach,
right?
And so.
How are they, do you know, with the Airbnb and stuff? Are they allowing short-term rentals?
Oh yeah,
in
fact. If you go and research, just do Airbnb Puerto Rico, the governor of Puerto Rico just met with the CEO of Airbnb just a week ago in San Francisco. Airbnb is doing a special promotion where they're going to, for 3 months, provide all their overrides to help the island. They have a very strong incentives for short-term rentals there because there's a shortage of rentals there.
Yeah.
I mean, the rentals market's expensive. That's why we're going to be there. We're going to be creating more Airbnb rentals, short-term rentals, in the city.
Right.
It's a perfect fit for our business model.
Wow.
So Airbnb is a huge plus.
Right.
They're more supportive of Airbnb in Puerto Rico than probably anywhere in the world right now.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I had no idea about that. Well, I mean, it seems like they're trying to, really open to accepting a lot of stuff, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, they've opened their arms to the
crypto community. It's a crypto universe there. It's all starting to happen. The problem Puerto Rico has is the real news, the fake news.
Yeah.
I'll give you a perfect example. A week before our conference, they had a blackout there. Lasted about an hour or two.
all over the news media. Oh, Puerto Rico's dark, it's down. You know, it's all this. And I'm saying, it was only an hour or two.
Yeah.
And I was living in Florida. We had a power out for a day sometimes. Nobody reported that news. But it's like the news just concentrates on whatever they can to magnify stuff.
Right.
It's much ado about nothing.
Right, right.
Huh. San Juan's fine, Puerto Rico. They're having to rebuild the interior. There's some poor areas. But what do you do when a hurricane comes through once every 100 years? It knocks out the homes with sticks and tin roofs, and they rebuild with cinder block and concrete.
I mean, it's definitely not, you know, having hurricanes is definitely not out of the ordinary for Puerto Rico.
Well, no, it is, actually. They don't get hit much. They haven't had a big
storms one and, you know, like, you know, just that's... In Florida, too, I mean, you get...
I was there for 20 hurricanes. And
right.
They rebuilt.
Right, you rebuilt. That's what I mean. It's like, it's not the end of the world. No. You know, it's kind of what happens there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that obviously a lot of people have questions about, you know, another thing that was in the news with it is, with Puerto Rico, is, you know, the economic situation as far as, you know, just like... the debt and you know, welfare state and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that's that doesn't worry you, or what do you think that they can do about that?
Well, I think the welfare state's the United States.
Yeah.
There's 8.2 million Puerto Ricans and 5 million are in the States.
Yeah.
It's 3.2 million in the island. And a number of them are in New York City, or, you know, in the welfare system,
right,
food stamps. But the ones staying in Puerto Rico, they're working their fannies off right now.
Right.
The debt is a problem. It's a long story about how that debt occurred, but it had to do really with manufacturing tax incentives that expired in 2006. The island wasn't prepared. The government had done a very bad job of promoting tourism. They'd squandered a lot of the money, and then they got hit with a recession, and then it just all unraveled. But they're addressing it. I mean, there's some great plans in place. They're privatizing the marketing of tourism. They're privatizing the energy grid. Oh. There are all kinds of tax incentives being created. I mean, their tourism is, as a percent of GDP, is less than 7%. Most of the Caribbean is 20 to 25, 30%. Mm. It's very easy to fix. Very easy. And they just have to, they know what to do now. The government's being very transparent, and it will not be business as usual. They have no choice but to turn this thing around. And they're doing it.
What was it that caused this? It seems like there was a drastic change. Was it just like desperation, or was there new people that came around that are now...
Caused what?
Just kind of, it seems like within the last 5 years or so, there's been a shift in the attitudes. You know, people are saying that the Puerto Rican government is so open to business now and all this type of stuff. And you didn't hear that in the past. I mean, you know, I'm not sure what...
Well, no, you didn't, because it was just inept, corrupt, bureaucratic...
Yeah.
Government,
right?
That had an easy. It's
called. That's what I mean. So
they have what's called Manufacturing Act 936, which was put in the early 70s. It gave great incentives for the pharmaceutical industry and other manufacturers, and that act gave a lot of extra money to the island, and the government just squandered it. They didn't do anything with it. They created agencies. They just blew it. They didn't really promote the island. They didn't need the tourism. They were doing so well. Well, those acts expired in 2006, and that's about the time that the recession hit, and then it had the bond defaults, and it just got worse and worse and worse. So now they're having to address those issues. But it all started back about 2013-14 with the tax benefits of Tax Acts 20 and 22, providing huge incentives for people to move to Puerto Rico, become residents, set up businesses. That's the first wave that is really starting to help.
Right.
But the government's changed. They just reduced from 170 agencies down to 30. They're much more transparent. They're getting smart. They're privatizing things. They're bringing in smart people. They're all working together. And,
right.
And I'm very encouraged. And I think the next wave we're going to see is some of the Puerto Ricans coming back from the States.
Right.
There's like 400,000 Puerto Ricans in Orlando right now.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us for the Borderless Podcast. Traveling, investing, and living beyond borders.